This is Radio Influence.
This is Landry Football on Radio Influence, the only podcast where you can get perspective of what happened on the gridiron through the eyes of a coach, scout, and front office administrator. Now, it's time to step into the film room. Here's Chris Landry.
Week 14 in the NFL is put to bed. Here, welcome to the Landry Football Podcast for this Tuesday, December 11th. Had the Seahawks and the Vikings wrap up Week 14 last night. What a weekend coming up this week, Week 15. Leading off, by the way, this is a couple of weeks now. We're going to get some Saturday games to mix in with your bowl games. We're going to get a couple of Saturday games. Got the Thursday night game, big matchup, Chargers-Chiefs. Couple of Saturday matchup, Texans, Jets, Browns, Broncos, and then we got, of course, the Monday night matchup, Sunday night matchup, and we only got two games in the second window on Sunday. So NFL center stage, obviously, as we're heading towards a stretch run. We're going to break down how some of the teams are looking going in. Going to do that today. We're going to get into John Gruden's situation. We're going to talk a little bit about some recruiting. Hey, look, folks, we're going to be covering a lot about recruiting here in the next week or two, signing day. We're going to get into a little bit of some recruiting news and a little bit of how we're handling recruiting on LandryFootball.com. Got some some questions we want to answer. Reminder that if you've got a question that you want answered here on LandryFootball.com podcast, send it to us. Hit contact Chris. Send us an email. We'll address it right here. Got one, two, about five-ish or so questions to answer. Got some news I want to start off with, though, that we're really excited about. We've been telling you, send us your email. We want to put you on an email list, and here's why. This is what we're getting. We've been working in the process of getting done, and here we go. We've talked about the idea of trying to create some contests, but also to try to create a newsletter of inside information that we want to provide to you, our listeners. Just something special for the listeners here, this podcast and Rush the Field podcast that I do with Scott Seidenberg every Wednesday. And we're come up with a concept of the War Room newsletter. It's going to be once a week. We're going to try to start it this Friday. Try to get it Friday morning. It'll depend if we're going to try to get it this week. There's some technical issues we need to work out. If we can get it done this Friday, we will. If not, we'll do it next Friday. But we're shooting for this Friday. And here's what it comes down to. We're going to provide some insider information just for you. It's going to be free. All you have to do is go to contact Chris on the website. Tell us you want to be involved in the newsletter. Just say War Room newsletter, what have you. We'll add you to the list. You'll get it once a week. Some information that's going on that behind the scenes that you're not going to really hear, that I'm not really necessarily comfortable putting publishing out there. But it's going to be information for our club, our War Room members, of our War Room newsletter concept. We're going to also give you the latest of what's going on at LandryFootball.com, which perhaps you've missed. Remind you of things that we've got going on there that's going to be real interesting. So you'll get that as well. But we've got to have your email address to do it. Obviously, if you're going to get on that email news list, you've got to send us your email. So that's what we're going to do. Yes, we're going to work on eventually, once we get enough people to see about some prizes and some subscriptions that we're going to give away. It's going to be critical to get this in before February. We've checked into different things and working with different companies and whatnot. They are suggesting that it's best to do this after the holiday period. So we're going to honor that. But here's what we're going to do. We're going to collect emails, and by February, we're probably going to have a cutoff point for the contest because we want to make it fair for everyone. We want to give everyone a chance to send their email in to be part of a contest, but then we also don't want to have it so big to where it's like a lottery, you know, to where it's, so many people that you have very little chance to win. So anyway, long story short, to be eligible, again, just send us for this newsletter, as well as to be eligible for prizes when we get to it, hit the contact Chris button on the website. Go to LandryFootball.com. You'll see the top red bar. You'll see home, about Chris, about LandryFootball.com, about Landry Football Operations, and you see contact Chris. Click on it. Send us your email, your name, and we will enter you in. It's very easy to participate. Just go ahead and do that. And so sign in today. And it's critical that you get it done now, preferably before the first of the year, before we can start out. Once we get to a certain cutoff point, then we'll cut off adding people in for contests. So if you want to be eligible for contests, send it in now before the end of the year. And, of course, if you want to get the newsletter, the inside information, again, just go ahead and pop that in. You don't have to designate Wish. You'll be included in the newsletter, and you'll be included in the contest just by hitting contact Chris. So, and a reminder, too, for LandryFootball.com, our holiday discount special, we're going to have a special prizes for people that are actually members. So what a great opportunity to get involved there. To get in for the holiday discount, get all the great information, as well as get into our system for prizes on that regard. I appreciate time on that. Okay, want to start with the latest in the NFL that came out. The Raiders letting go Reggie McKenzie as their general manager. It is something that we talked about when discussing John Gruden and how he fits. When he was the apple of everybody's eyes, we tell you that John Gruden comes with a special designation of, yeah, he's very creative, offensive mind, schematically can cause a lot of challenges for defenses. But his system's not real easy to learn. He can be very picky on who he wants, and didn't want Khalil Mack for his defense, didn't want to pay him. Now, Amari Cooper couldn't fit in, and boy, have those guys had an impact, well, the Bears and the Cowboys. It hasn't looked much worse for John Gruden than it does when you're watching the Bears terrorizing the Rams on Sunday Night Football with Khalil Mack. And you see the Cowboys' resurgence, largely due to Amari Cooper. Makes you wonder, okay, John, I get it. You want to build a team in your own image. What does it say about your system if you can't fit guys of that ilk into your system? You got an issue there. You got to build around good players. And certainly it is not a good system if you are not able to find a role for players that have that type of ability. Okay, they're not able to adjust to what you want to do. Well, the good coaches adjust to their personnel. Time remains on seeing how good John can do to build this Raiders operation, but there is no doubt when he got the job, 10 years, $10 million, that he was going to run everything in the Raiders operation. Mark Davis is committed to him, unlike any other, and he's going to be there. We knew it was only a matter of time, didn't we, that Reggie McKenzie was going to be gone. There will be somebody that will come in that will work under John, that will answer to John, that will coordinate things for John, somebody that John can trust to organize the personnel side. And John Gruden will make the decisions on who they sign, who they release, who they keep, who they draft, but he's going to want somebody that he trusts that's going to set the table up for him. Who's that going to be? I don't know. Bruce Allen is certainly not a personnel guy, but is somebody that has got a strong background with Gruden, and I can see Bruce coming in, leaving the Redskins, and hiring personnel people underneath him. But John Gruden is going to be the guy that is going to run it. Now, watching that team, and it certainly was a good win over the Steelers, but you wonder about this roster and how far they've taken a step back. Everything is going to come down to how well they draft and use those multitude of picks that they have. We will keep you up to date on all the latest in that general manager search, but keep an eye out on Bruce Allen. We'll see how things may play out there as a possibility. There'll be some other names that will come out in that situation. I'm sure Jimmy Ray's name is going to come in. It's another guy that's had a background with John. If you don't know, John and Bruce Allen worked together with the Raiders and in the Buccaneers operation. The Vikings collapse last night, particularly offensively, had a resounding effect as this morning they fired their offensive coordinator, John DeFilippo. Very bright young coach, came over from Philadelphia. Things haven't gone very well. What an ugly performance last night. It was ugly offensively. Yeah, the defenses, I thought, did some good things in the game, but you look at those teams, Seattle and Minnesota, and you think, boy, these teams are going to struggle, particularly going on the road and trying to win in the playoffs. Minnesota does not look like they will make it at this point. Seattle, they're getting in. They're getting in as a wild card. They're going to be the fifth seed. The Vikings are going to have to hold off the Panthers. Right now, they would make it. They're a half game ahead of Carolina. They're a half game ahead of Philadelphia. They're a half game ahead of Washington. Vikings offensively look really poor. And it's not just DeFilippo. They need a new voice. They need a new direction. They need a spark. Really, the quarterback position, you wonder if they've made the right moves. They took a gamble. It hasn't worked. This is not the same team as it was last year. Last year, we know how close they came. Not happening this year. Not the consistency running the football. Not consistently making plays in the passing game. Really a struggle to this point. Now, Seattle playing better. Got Russell Wilson. Boy, his ability to extend plays and get the ball out is there. And they're running the football a little bit better. They're good-looking wild card team. Could be a problem for somebody first round. Defensively, they're no longer great, but they're still pretty good. Their linebackers are outstanding. They do a good job in coverage. As I said, I was impressed with the defensive performance watching them and charting the game. But boy, there were some missed opportunities by both offenses. I worry about these teams going forward. This past weekend's action, which stood out at me, a couple of things. Carolina's problems are egregious. Cam Newton's not right. He's not healthy. They're a shell of themselves. They host the Saints next Monday night. And what might be, certainly it's the last road game for the Saints. They've got Carolina in Pittsburgh, actually Pittsburgh, and then Carolina at home as the Saints are closing in the home field advantage now that the Bears beat the Rams. This Carolina team is struggling. Like the fact that Cleveland is doing a nice job of fighting, defensively playing well. I don't think it's going to be enough to keep Greg Williams on the job, but I think he's made a case. He's done a pretty good job in that situation. I thought Green Bay responded very well this week. But offensively, they still got some holes. And how bad is Carolina? How bad is Carolina defensively? They also don't attack downfield well offensively. This Falcon team needs to take a hard look at where they are right now. We know the Packers are in a head coach search mold. Where they go there is going to be interesting. Really intrigued. One of the better games all year is Baltimore-Kansas City. Baltimore, I thought, did some really good things defensively, and I thought Lamar Jackson played well. I got to tell you, Kansas City looks to be in good shape to get home field advantage. I worry about them running the football without Kareem Hunt, and I worry about them in the playoffs. I still see them as they're going to have to outscore people. I thought they did a pretty good job defensively getting off the field when they needed to. And that's going to have to continue in the playoffs. My concern for them is I study them, because I get asked this a lot about, well, how good is Kansas City? You know, it's only going to be as good as their defense is against playoff caliber offenses. They don't have to shut people out. They've got to be good rushing the passer with a lead, if they can get a lead, and they've got to be good third down, good red zone. Really important. But they look to be in good position to get home field advantage. Why? They've got a 2-game lead over New England. Now, they get into a tie. They lose the tiebreaker to New England. New England beat them. But 2-game cushion, they're in good position now because New England blew that game against Miami. We've talked about, didn't we, about the struggles of the Patriots in South Beach, the heat, the climate. Indigestion from Joe's Stone Crabs. I don't know what it is. They don't play well in Miami. They didn't play poorly, but boy, did they play poorly on that last play. They had Miami beat. By now, you've seen the replay. That's not very often I can say this. Very poorly positioned and poorly coached on that last play were the Patriots. Good win for Miami. Keeps them, kind of keeps them in the race. You know, keeps them on the outside looking in, but they're right there, would be in the eighth position right now. So they're in it. Baltimore right now wins tiebreak over Miami based upon winning percentage in common games. Baltimore is in good position and not out of possibility in their own division. Miami's kind of hanging on and needs to finish strong here. So it's a good win for them, but a tough loss for New England, as it probably makes them go on the road. They would be the number two seed right now, ahead of the Texans, but in danger with another loss. And by the way, I don't think that's going to happen. If they were to lose and lose the tiebreaker, obviously, lose the bye to Houston, that would be a hurt. I still think New England will end up with the two seed, and it might have to go to Kansas City. Or if Kansas City gets knocked off, you still got to go to Gillette at that point and beat New England. The thing about New England when I watch them is they're not a great team, but they're good as always. I talk about they didn't play well, didn't position themselves on that final drive and that last play, but for the most part, they're well prepared. Got Brady, situational defense. So I'm looking at the AFC. I'm thinking more and more. Kansas City, New England, the Chargers. And by the way, Kansas City, they got a two-game lead over New England for home field. They got a one-game lead over the Chargers for the division. So we could see the Chiefs go from one seed to a five seed. Because if you're ranking the teams right now, how they're playing on film, you could make the case that the Chargers are two. They'd be the fifth seed because they'd be a wild card. How big is that game Thursday night? It may be, yeah, you got the hype games of the Rams and the Chiefs. This Chargers-Chiefs game is the biggest game because of when it is, Thursday night, primetime, Arrowhead, division at stake, one seed at stake versus five seed. I mean, it's one thing to be playing a team and maybe for the one or two seed. But you're playing a division opponent that could be determine whether you're the one or five seed. Huge. Going to be loads of fun. Can't wait to break that down for you on Thursday's show. Elsewhere around the league this past week, the Saints struggled in the first half offensively against Tampa. Big plays. You need big plays to kind of spark your team, get back in. No question about it. Taysom Hill's block punt. Turn that game around. Turn the momentum. Got the offense juiced up. Got some points. Tampa offensively has some talent. They play well. Didn't do a bad job at all defensively in the first half defending the run. But sustaining it, consistency, been a problem for the Bucs. Saints were able to come back second half, kind of impose their will, take control of the game, kind of win going away. As I mentioned, a game at home and a game on the road, starting on the road to Carolina this week. Last game of the year, had the Panthers at home and have got a home date against the Steelers. That's what's left for the Saints. That's what's left for home field advantage. They win those three, everybody's going to the dome in the NFC for as long as the Saints can stay alive. I don't see the Rams losing another game. So if the Saints were to lose, then I think we go to Los Angeles. I've got more concerns right now about how the Rams are playing on offense than the Saints. I think the Saints, neither are playing their best ball. Both are trying to find their rhythm. But right now, the Rams are a little bit more concerning on how they play. They did not look good against the Bears Sunday night at all. They didn't protect very well. They really struggled in their protections against the Bears. I think the Saints' offensive line's a little better, and I think they can get the ball out quicker. I think it's tougher to fool Drew Brees than it is Jared Goff. And you know, both the Rams and the Saints need a running game. I think the Saints can work the screen game and get the ball out quickly to work their way into the run game a little bit better than the Rams can. But we'll see. Lots of football left. And it's still about, you know, staying healthy and finishing strong. Giants are playing better ball, folks. I mean, that's a turnaround. First year coach. They're going to quit on them. No, they're not. They're playing hard. They're playing well. Good win for them. Good win for the Colts, rebounding after a tough loss last week to Jacksonville. Rebounding and beating the Texans on the road. Big win. Andrew Luck played well. Keeps that division race or the playoff race interesting. I still think the Texans are in great position. But the Colts right now would get the sixth seed if the playoffs were to be right now. They win a tiebreaker over head-to-head with the Dolphins to the Colts. So to move forward, we see what the Colts have this week and how they're able to build upon it. It's going to be real interesting to see them against Dallas, a team that's playing good ball, how they play out. Texans are going to be fine. Saw nothing there that alarmed me, although I will say that most of this nice win streak has come against teams that don't look like playoff caliber teams. That was not a good look. Seeing how they get back on track this week, they got the Jets this week. They'll be fine. They'll win that on the road. But finishing strong is important. Winning that division, possibly getting a bye, would help that team out a great deal. The Chargers take care of business. Good-looking football team. Well-rounded football team. I think they're a more complete team than Kansas City. I just think getting that one seed, getting that bye versus a five seed is all the difference in the world. Denver with a clunker on the road against San Francisco. What a bad look it was. They couldn't cover the tight end, George Kittle, to save their life. Really bad look. Really, really bad look for the Broncos as they're falling out of it. Got to hand it to the Cowboys. They're playing good ball. They're playing with confidence on offense, running the football well. Dak's playing well. Amari Cooper's had tremendous impact on their big playability. And defensively, Rod Marinelli, Chris Richard has got them playing very, very well. Very good-looking team. Fact, you can make the argument based upon their performances this past week, Chicago, Dallas are contenders. They're definitely going to, I think they're going to win their divisions, and we'll see what they can do in the playoffs, the Bears, the Cowboys. I don't know that I like the Cowboys to go back on the road and win, maybe in Los Angeles. I don't like their chances in New Orleans. I know they beat the Saints. I don't know if they have enough offense. I don't know if the Bears have enough offense. But they will play good defense, and they run the football well enough. And if they do those things, they've got a shot. It's going to be interesting. Definitely have a shot. We'll see how this plays out. Philly's just not been able to get it done. I thought they had a great chance. They were playing right with Dallas, had a chance to take it, you know, and possibly win it. It played right with the Cowboys the entire game. Just wasn't quite enough. What's wrong with the Pittsburgh Steelers? Could they miss the playoffs? Yes, they could. They absolutely could. Got New England, got New Orleans. Man, this team is struggling. Man, they're not playing with much heart, much direction. No excuse to go on the road to look at Oakland. If they miss the playoffs, it's not losing New England, New Orleans that they're going to look back on. It's going to be this game against the Raiders, in which they absolutely blew it. Bad look, bad attitude, bad direction. This is not an organization that makes changes at the head coach position like others do. But you begin to wonder if the message is not being heard from Mike Tomlin. Just wonder. We'll see how this finishes up with that team. Like the fight of the Raiders, though, give them a lot of credit. They played well. Detroit and Arizona was a bad look. Two teams that are struggling big time. Good win for the Lions on the road. Any win is big. We talked a little bit about the Rams. Talked a little bit about the Bears for a second. Can they run the football well enough? I like Dallas's consistency in the running game a little better by comparison. I like the Bears' defense even more than I like Dallas's. Boy, the Bears can really put a lot of pressure on you defensively. Just going to come down to it is that defense will show up. They're going to have to show up on the road, which it will. Defenses travel well on the road, but they're going to have to get some offense. They're going to have to find a way to make some plays on offense. So it'll be fun to watch this Bears team as the Cowboys and the Bears are going to have to play first round, but those are the teams that you want to watch in the first round in the NFC. Those are the best first round teams that we'll see how things develop there. In terms of a contender, I think that the Rams and the Saints, particularly the Saints at home, would be very difficult to beat. But I do like what I'm seeing out of the Bears and the Cowboys. I'm just not ready to say yet, don't have to yet, as to whether they're good enough to win it. I want to get to a few questions. I want to remind you, though, about the holiday promo at LandryFootball.com. Folks, you can learn what NFL teams, college programs already know by joining us at LandryFootball.com and get an even greater holiday discount now. Listen, it's a perfect holiday gift. Time, very clumpy. Go up, sign up. It's a great gift for you or a loved one. It gives all year long. The film room analysis on the remaining, the bowl games coming up, which got them starting this week, right? We've got Got some bowl games. We're going to break them down on LandryFootball.com. New Mexico Bowl, the Cure Bowl, Las Vegas Bowl, the Camellia Bowl, the New Orleans Bowl. All these games are on Saturday. We're going to break those down for you on the website. All the remaining key NFL games, every NFL game really, but the key ones that are going to dictate who makes the playoffs, all the playoff games all the way through the Super Bowl. Then, of course, recruiting classes, the breakdown on recruiting, upcoming draft class, free agency, all year round, inside information, the coaching searches on the college and NFL level. That's what we'll provide for you at LandryFootball.com. Less than the magazine subscription, you even get it cheaper with an even greater holiday discount. Just tell us that you heard it right here on the Landry Football Podcast so that we can get you that discount. All right, we've got some questions we want to answer. I want to talk about first recruiting and how we're going to handle recruiting. We're working on it, and we're going to have a conference-by-conference breakdown. There's a different ways to do it. And what we try to do is try to not bore you with minutia, but try to give you a feel for what the impact is and who's doing what in each conference. So I've decided that what I'm working on and I'm going to have for you here coming up the next few days in this week before signing day, which is a week from Wednesday, we're going to have the rankings within the conference of who's doing the best job and the list of players, and you kind of see where they who they've got. We're going to do that prior to it. And then once the signing day is over, then that's when I'm going to break down the classes, because I thought about doing it, but I didn't want to do it before because you've got some changes on who commits, and then it's going to affect how the class may look. And you're talking about a guy and the impact he's going to have for, you know, school A, and he ends up changing his commitment with school B. So what we're going to do is break down what's going on and what's how it's looking going into signing day. And then we're going to break it down after signing day. And remember, 80% of the players are going to sign in this early signing period. And then we'll update it, of course, in February. But we're going to give you a breakdown of how the classes have done with grades, what the grades mean, and an overview of the impact of each draft class and kind of tell you how they rank nationally. So that's how we're going to handle recruiting on LandryFootball.com. So you want to be involved in that. You want to get a feel for it. So much now what we get is a lot of localized about who's doing this and who's doing that, and everybody's great. And, you know, if a top school goes after a kid, he's better than what he was before. And a lot of it's just information gathering. What we cut through is cut through the film work and tell you who's really done a good job, who's really good, and who's having the impact. Because what recruiting is, it's not about just who's best. I mean, I know you want to know who's had the best second, third, fourth best recruiting classes in the ACC or what have you, and how do they stack up nationally. That's important. But it's important to know who's really got good players and who they are and how they're going to impact. That's what recruiting is all about. It's about the acquisition of players and the development of players. So that's what we're going to do for you that's different from a perspective of somebody that's been a recruiting coordinator in college as opposed to just the rah-rah rags of, you know, this guy's got this many five stars and they're the best, and without really understanding how the process works. Did want to pass along some news as we got big news out of Alabama. Over the weekend, Alabama flipped two prospects in their secondary. We've got it up on the website, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it, but they've got a Texas A&M and a Michigan flip to help them at both corner and safety, which is really good. But they did lose, I think, the best player in the state of Alabama, a five-star prospect, a blue-grade player. And you know what a blue-grade player is. You go on the website and find out. Clay Webb is an outstanding interior offensive lineman. I think he's going to be a great center. He's really more 6'2", listed as 6'3". What a big-time football player. Tough, gritty, smart football player. Strong as an ox. Oxford, Alabama, kind of halfway between, you know, Tuscaloosa and Athens. He's going to Georgia. Georgia has one offer of services. He's committed, and he's going to sign with the Georgia Bulldogs. A lot of family ties there. So it was a tough deal for Alabama to lose him. They normally get everyone, but they didn't get him, as Georgia's having a great recruiting class. We've got some updates on whose classes are doing the best right now and keeping you updated on the latest guys that are uncommitted and where they're leaning. So we've got that up on LandryFootball.com, but wanted to mention what's going on in that regard. By the way, a lot of conversation has talked about college football facilities and who has the best facilities. Well, that's a little bit to each his own and what you like, but as I was thinking about it and jotting down some names of schools, that the best facilities are the newest ones. A lot of people are got really good facilities now. The newest ones are more opulent, more, you know, bigger and better and add more things to it, and there's a constant arms race with it. But you start looking at the programs that are the best, and a lot of those programs are reflected in facilities. Clemson, A&M, Oklahoma, Notre Dame. Four of the best teams in the playoffs, they're all got top 10 facilities in my view. Unbelievable. Notre Dame has done a tremendous job of upgrading what they used to have. A&M, of course, is the newest facility, maybe the best. If it's not, Clemson's probably the best. But what's interesting is you got programs like a Florida, like a Penn State, like a Miami that don't have what you'd call top 20 type facilities. Good, but not as good as those. You also look at SEC schools or Southern schools where the emphasis, you mentioned Clemson, A&M, Alabama, Tennessee, all would be in the top five. LSU, South Carolina, Texas, Georgia, Auburn, Kentucky. Yeah, that probably would surprise you that Kentucky football, South Carolina football would have two of the top 15 or so facilities in the country. They do. If you're looking at schools outside of the South that have top 20 facilities, Oregon has them. Ohio State has them. Michigan has one. Notre Dame, I mentioned. USC, the McKay Center is great. Washington's great. Northwestern's new facility is great. But most of them, if you take the top 20, 15 of the top 20, 14 of the top 20 from the South, and six of them from the SEC. It is an arms race, and if you look at the recruiting classes and their ranks, they'll correspond with their facilities. Ton of the ways it goes. All right, let's finish up today with some questions. Richard asks, what was your thoughts on Will Grier skipping the bowl game? Richard, the bowl game and skipping bowl games, obviously it's topical. It's timely. I admit I don't like it, but I'm old school. I understand it. This is why, Richard, I've said what I've said about we need to make the bowl games an extension of the regular season to where I think we'd have less of this, these guys sitting out. These games would be more meaningful. They would contribute towards potentially something and getting an invite. I think what it's done is the playoffs have made the other bowl games less and less meaningful. And if you're not playing in one of those games and you're a prospect, it has an effect. Don't think Jalen Smith's injury in the Fiesta Bowl a few years ago when he was at Notre Dame playing against Ohio State, that has a tremendous impact. It affected him. Agents are telling him not to play. It's not a smart thing. He had only something to lose. So I don't like it personally. I want to see these guys play and compete, but I understand it. And I don't really hold it against them. We haven't seen quarterbacks skip these games. Will Grier's maybe starting a trend in that regard. It's not going to surprise me. Richard also asked, what was your scouting evaluation of Drew Bledsoe coming out of Washington State? Well, first of all, quick little story. I made a few visits to Washington State, scout Drew. But I tell you, the one that I remember the most was I was going to catch the Apple Cup game that year. Both Washington and Washington State were really good teams, a lot of prospects. And I'm driving through Montana in a rental car. And I hit probably the biggest snowstorm that I've ever seen. It's the first time I've ever seen one of these signs. You ever been on, like when it's snowing or there's some weather, they bring out these digital signs that, you know, says, you know, caution this or that. It's not the normal standard sign that's just there, but it's the one that's, I guess, hooked up to electricity or wherever they do it, where they say caution this or that. This was the most ominous sign I've ever seen in my life. It says, if your tires are not equipped with chains, you're in grave danger. Well, guess whose rental car, a mid-sized car, by the way, that's all they had left, did not have chains on it. Yeah, this Southern boy is driving through Montana. And, of course, you can't go very far. And I think I arrived at Friday night, Saturday morning, 3 in the morning. My neck was so stiff from having all fours just grasp that steering wheel, trying to steer that little whatever I had just all across the road, because it was coming down so hard. There's no clearing the roads in time when it's coming down that hard. That's not what you asked, but that's the first thing that I remember about scouting Drew Bledsoe. Drew had tremendous physical gifts and really good football character and toughness. And I thought he had a really good career. I liked him at Washington State a lot. He didn't have the character problems that Ryan Leaf later had when he was there. And so the background was good. The pedigree was good. The work ethic was good. The physical skills were good. Was not ever going to be a real overly athletic guy. If you remember, it was he and Rick Meyer that came out. Of course, Bill Walsh was championing Rick Meyer and said he reminded him Montana and all that. People forget that stuff. But Bledsoe, to me, was pure pocket guy, could deliver the ball out on time pretty well. And I gave him a pretty good grade, really, really high grade. I would say that his pro career was commensurate of what I gave him, maybe a little bit short, but I gave him a pretty good grade. Jacob asks, and this is a follow-up, which players who declared for the draft or sitting out of their bowl games have made a mistake in your opinion? Well, let me answer this way, Jacob. Look, it's all personal. Here's what I would say universally. If you're injured or you've got some medical issues, don't play. If you're a high pick, and I'm just talking from a pro prospect standpoint, I'm a big believer in play with your team. That shows a lot about your competitive character. I'm big on that. Okay, so don't get me wrong. But if you're going to make a decision just based on your true draft prospect status, if you're a high pick, you're probably not going to gain a lot from playing. But if you're a guy that's got something to prove, meaning you're not a high pick, you're going to be a mid-round guy, why the hell wouldn't you play? You got a chance to improve yourself. You got a chance to improve yourself, I think you should play. In terms of what teams, I don't know that I would say that one team more than the other is going to be hurt. I would say that West Virginia would be one of them. I like Syracuse's chances better without Will Greer. I mean, I think that's a big part of it. You mentioned Kajusa sitting out, but particularly Greer. There's not a group that I would say is overly hurt by it more than the next. There's some that I would concern myself with in terms of where they're going to be and whether they're going to compete. You know, I'm working on a list of kind of where things are going to be going with guys sitting out. But I wouldn't say at this point that I would say. I would certainly say that LSU not having Greedy Williams hurts. They're going to be down a couple of corners due to injury and now Greedy out. That's going to hurt them a little bit. But I would be more concerned about motivation in some of these games, which contributes why some of them are not playing, than I would be anything else. So, and Jacob wants to be part of the promotions that we're talking about. And absolutely, Jacob, you are going to be in there, buddy. Bryce asks, how does Kareem Hunt affect the Chiefs during the stretch run? Bryce, I think it affects it a lot. I think it hurts their ability to play game control. I think it hurts their ability to run the football as well as they need to. So with a lead, I could see them constantly throwing the football and putting their defense back out on the field, which I only think hurts their chances. I think it hurts it a good bit. Gerard asks about me talking about the Cliff Kingsbury fit at USC. And to recap, I talked about the fact that Cliff's offense, which is a little bit more the air raid screen pass that gets away from the power run, is not being the style that I think best fits USC. And he's taken a little bit of issue with it. You know, he mentioned that I said that Texas and Oklahoma, you don't do that. That's correct. Yeah, I know Oklahoma's going to the playoffs, but Oklahoma's also not a championship caliber team either because they don't run the football with power and they don't play really good defense. My point is that I think Oklahoma and Texas could be like Clemson. I think USC can be like Clemson, where you can run some tempo offense, run power, and recruit players defensively that can be big war daddies up front, high draft picks, and you can be playoff caliber that could do damage. I think USC is that type of a program. They're not now, but that's what their potential is. Jared, and I'm sorry, I think I said Gerard. It's Jared, I believe, is how you pronounce his name, talks about the adaptability of the air raid offense, like any coach could. But you got to understand something, Jared. Not every coach adapts. You know, it's not just, you know, well, everyone can adapt. No, not everyone can adapt. Not everyone is as skilled. I don't think Cliff Kingsbury is as good as Lincoln Riley as an offensive play caller and designer. And your point is Kingsbury should be able to do that at USC. He should. And perhaps he will. How good will he be? I question. I don't know that he's going to be that good. You said the air raid isn't just gimmick anymore. Well, again, Jared, your understanding of football and offenses are a little different than mine, okay? You have a conceptual idea that all these teams, that Lincoln Riley is, you know, from the air raid system, so they're all the same. No, they're not. Oklahoma's offense is not the same as what Texas Tech ran. Not the same at all. Not even close. So your idea of understanding of how to break down offenses and defenses are a little bit different than somebody that's done it. It's not the same. It doesn't mean that Cliff can't be successful. He should be successful at USC. Is it the right way to go? I don't think so. The NFL has used a lot of air raid principles recently. No, that's not accurate. It's a fundamental misunderstanding of what you're throwing in is, you know, well, they're running RPOs. That's not what air raid is. It's not understanding what they are. So, again, you're bringing out points instead of answering questions, asking questions, and you're bringing out some things that are not correct. So he's saying that Kingsbury's offense is a gimmick, is kind of an old school kind of thought. No, it's an accurate kind of thought because I understand how to evaluate a scheme. So understand that maybe some well-pointed questions would be better than preaching because the style is a little different than you think. And there's nobody running air raid offenses in the NFL. There's some RPO concepts. But I get your point. You bring up some good points, but you kind of go over the top with some of your declarations about what's going on. You got to know how to study film, and you got to actually study film to know what teams are doing and what they're not doing. And because somebody is falling from the same tree as someone else doesn't mean they're as good. And that would be my interest. Now, I'm not saying that Kingsbury's not going to be successful. I don't think that style is the direction that would work best at USC. I think USC could be more balanced and more powerful. USC could do what they're doing at Alabama, what they're doing at Clemson. And with what they're doing with Cliff is not what they're going to do. So, therefore, I think it is a little too gimmicky. I think Oklahoma's a little too gimmicky, which is why I think they're good enough to get there, but I don't think they're good enough to go any further once they get into the playoffs. That's my opinion. And part of their inability to run the football and play game control negatively affects their defense as well. But we appreciate your questions or your comments, and hopefully it gives you an idea where I'm coming from in evaluating talent. And now I'm not just being – I am old school. You're right there. But I'm old school with – an idea of an understanding of what truly is as opposed to what the perception is from a fan viewpoint. Let's see. Rock asks on Twitter, can we get a Landry grade on the hire of Kansas State? Disappointed it's not Venables or Leavitt. Well, I can tell you, and if you follow me on LandryFootball.com, Brent Venables was not – I don't know that they were all that interested, but I don't think Brent was going to take the job. In fact, I know he wasn't. He was going to stay. Timing wasn't right. He was going to stay at Clemson with his son. Jim Leavitt, not as much interest shown there. Let's call it what it is. Got an athletic director that knows Chris Klieman and likes him. And listen, it's a good coach. He'll have a chance to build his program, and I think he can do a good job there. Rock's contention is that it may not be a destination job for him. That's okay, Rock. You want a coach. If you're at Kansas State, you're at Iowa State, you're at any of these places, you don't want a coach that's going to stay. You want a coach that is going to be tempted to leave. You want a coach that somebody wants to come and get. Because if they don't want to come and get you, you haven't hired the right guy. If you're at Kansas State, you want them to come after your guy. Then you go and get another guy. That's your job as an administrator. So I never get the idea, we don't want this guy because if he's good, he's going to leave. No, that's exactly why you do want him, because he's going to be good and somebody's going to pluck him away. And you need to go find that next guy. Maybe that next guy's on that staff. But you don't want somebody that no one's going to come and take, because they're not going to come and take them if they're not doing a very good job. So that's how I see it. All right, folks, that'll wrap it up for today. On Thursday, we'll break down a couple of bowl games. We'll break down the week into the NFL, week 15. So we'll come into that and break all that down for you. We appreciate you joining us. Reminding you to sign up for our email newsletter that we're working on and getting out for you. You can do that by going to LandryFootball.com and hit Contact Chris. We appreciate you joining us. Talk to you again Thursday in another edition of the Landry Football Podcast on LandryFootball.com.
To get more of Chris's knowledge, visit and subscribe to LandryFootball.com. You can also find him on Twitter at LandryFootball. This has been Landry Football on Radio Influence.
This is a Crush Performance Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
Major League Baseball is set for some real challenges coming off of a very, very peculiar year. I don't think there's ever been a game that's changed so rapidly, so quickly as the game of baseball. And it's mostly driven by the numbers, I believe. The interesting thing is, it's all going to come back, I believe, to what really counts, and that's the player on the field and how they execute the game. All this new data is going to be powerful drivers for how we move forward. But the game has changed, and it's still changing. How are we going to deal with it moving forward? Well, it's already influenced how we prepare our athletes for the game. But how are organizations going to respond to these rapid changes? And as the game remains in this state of flux, how can you possibly plan for success?
Crush Performance with Jeff Crushell can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.